This is Paul McGann.
The Eighth Doctor, you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio. Go and throw yourself under a bus.
I didn't mean to say that. He told me to say that.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up. Welcome to episode 379 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where you really shouldn't believe anything we tell you. Unless we turn out to be right, in which case we want some residuals. I'm Keir.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay. And this week, Keir's made up another odd game at the expense of our Doctor Who fan credibility, this time called the Rumor Mill.
This sounds a lot like the Elevator Pitch of Doom game we played back in 2016.
Right, the one where we had to take Doctor Who characters and come up with a BBC exec pitch for the show.
Like the Paternoster Gang doing a home renovation show.
Well, yeah, it's similar in the way that it uses a random set of working materials, but we're going to stay true to a science fiction format. So this is actually the creation of a single episode synopsis, given a few basic building blocks that I'm going to draw effectively from a hat. So you'll have your heroes, your adversaries, and a location that are all possibly provided. But there are wild cards in those decks, so to speak. You will come up with the conflict that involve all those things, and then write a really quick synopsis for it. So you basically, you're gonna come up with the little summary that we would see on our DVR screen. Make sense?
Yeah.
No questions? Cool. All right, let's get started. Haley, since we are testing your new internet connection tonight and we want to make sure that everything is fantastic, I'm going to put you in the hot seat first.
Okay.
So I am reaching for my stack of potential heroes on here. I will not quantify that these are always doctors or anything of that sort because there are a few instances where there aren't. So I have one hero, one adversary card, and one location card. So Haley, you're going to be working on a synopsis and we'll take a few minutes to come up with these. We'll edit these out for all of your listening ease. So you're welcome, folks. Haley, you are going to take Third Doctor and Joe Grant. They are going to be dealing with some situation involving a wild card adversary. Okay, an adversary of your choosing, but the location is going to be on the planet of cats. All right. Third Doctor and Joe Grant, any adversary you choose, something happening on the planet of cats.
That was the planet with the cats that are nurses, right?
I'm just saying a planet of cats.
Okay.
You could take that any way you want. Jay, you are going to be, for your heroes, working with Kate Stewart and Osgood.
Okay.
So you're at a good advantage here. your adversary is a group of sentient ferns.
All right.
I don't know what, I think I was really tired when I wrote these. And your location is the Cincinnati Zoo.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And just for the record, so everyone knows what I'm dealing with, I have a 10th Doctor and Rose. They are going to be contending in some fashion with alien hyper-intelligent toddlers. So right in my wheelhouse. The location for my story will be, I have a wild card. So I have a wild card location. All right. So everybody's got their marching orders and we'll be back in one sound bump. All right. So we'll take these in the order that they were drawn. So Haley, you had your setup first where you were dealing with the Third Doctor and Joe Grant. Facing off against an adversary of your choosing in a location of the planet of cats. What's our episode?
All right, so Third Doctor and Joe Grant disembark from the TARDIS at the beginning of the episode. because it's a special trip for Joe where she gets to meet the Planet of the Cats. And she's looking forward to a lovely long weekend of just, you know, hanging out and petting cats and then being very annoyed by the cats. And the Doctor and Joe run into no one else but the Autons. Since this is the elevator pitch, not a lot of details, but this episode would include plastic cats, cats playing with plastic parts of Autons, and Autons tripping over cats.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Just enough to wet your whistle, and hopefully you tune in. Jay, you've got dealing with our unit team, Kate Stewart and Osgood, squaring off against Sentient Ferns, something involving the Cincinnati Zoo.
So Kate and Osgood find themselves on the strangest assignment of having to guard the lion that is on loan from the Royal Zoo to the zoo in Cincinnati, Ohio. Seems like an easy enough thing. The biggest problem is just keeping themselves occupied until all of a sudden animals start getting sick in the zoo and they realize that these sentient ferns have started attacking all the wildlife.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. I had 10th and Rose, something involving alien hyper-intelligent toddlers at a wild card location. So it was going to be a bit of a vacation, a bit of a holiday weekend for Rose traveling with the 10th Doctor, as she decided that since we were closing in on Easter time, she wanted to bring some joy of the spring holiday and the celebration of rebirth to a planet where there were a predominant number of little kids. She wanted to surround herself with adorable little children, tiny tots. And things were looking very good as they landed on the planet of Poopoo Stank until they realized that there was a bit of role reversal and all of the adults who were supposed to be the caretakers and caregivers on the planet were subservient to these hyper-intelligent little crumb gobblers. Right. Round two, Jay, I'm going to give you first setup on these things. Your heroes, are 13 and Jack. Right. Okay. Interesting little pairing there. We have yet to have to see them. Their adversary is themselves at that. And your location, is the opening of the first American mall. Okay.
All right.
I will take, I have the War Doctor, who will be in something dealing with the Cybermen as the adversary. And location says the Arctic Circle. Oh, this is sounding a little bit familiar. Just slightly, slight little change there. I'll have to flip it somehow. Haley, you are going to have Gwen and Owen as your heroes. Your adversaries are the Skittles Daleks. And your location is present-day London, 2020, meaning really present-day. Like, we're talking lockdown London.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be back in one edit. All right. So, Jay, you got teed up first on this one, and you were handed a very interesting assignment here. Not only taking 13 and Jack, but pitting them against themselves, something having to do with the first American mall. So what do you got?
So the Doctor and Jack show up at the first American shopping mall opening up, both very excited about this for very different reasons, but something seems a little bit off, and they seem to be one step behind whatever is happening, and they can't quite find what the problem is. It's almost as if they're, you know, a step behind everything, but is it possible for the Doctor and Jack to outsmart themselves?
Is it? Is it, though? All right. The War Doctor has taken an opportunity to investigate the melting of the polar ice caps and the rapid ascension of this global problem, and travels to the Arctic Circle to try and find what may be done, because humans are clearly incapable of doing the obvious, to try and slow or perhaps even rectify the issue, when he finds that there is one small region or adjacent to the North Pole where the rate of temperature rise has not risen, but has plunged dramatically. There is a pocket within the Arctic Circle that is super cool And none of the research scientists within the area can find anything to explain this until he decides to dig a little deeper and find that the Cybermen are somehow involved. And what would their strategy be? And why would they want to actually keep part of the Arctic Circle even colder than it normally should be? He might have to enlist a certain shape-shifting penguin.
Nice.
Haley, you have Gwen and Owen dealing with the Skittles Daleks in present-day London.
So I'll start by saying, minor spoiler, if you're watching along with us as we do the Torchwood rewatch for the first time. But as we all know, Owen in 2020 would probably be a radioactively decaying, rotting husk of his former self. But he's also still Owen. So at least one moment in this episode story is going to involve him trying to hit on somebody and getting punched in the face for being gross and disgusting. And also not socially distancing. 6 feet away, Owen. But this episode involves an invasion by the Skittles Daleks trying to take advantage of the world being distracted by other things going on right now. UNIT is busy dealing with COVID-19, so the reformed Torchwood is on the case.
The reform, the shambles of Torchwood.
Whatever bits of it are left.
All right. So for round three here, I'll take first draws on these, and my heroes will be, okay, that's a good pairing. Yaz and Graham, we want more time from anyway. Adversary, jeez. Teenage Davros.
Oh, jeez.
And my location, what was I thinking when I pulled these things? My location is Woodstock, 1969.
Awesome.
So this should be fascinating. Let's see who I got next here. Haley, you would be next. Your heroes will be 12 and Bill. Great pairing there. Adversaries being the meddling monk. He's back, everybody. And location, Scarrow. Oh, interesting. All right, so good game pieces there. And Jay, you've got 11 and Clara. Sorry.
Okay.
Adversaries, your choice of either the nesting consciousness or the Auton specifically.
Okay.
All right. Sounds familiar already. But your location is Times Square, New York.
All right.
All right. So off to do your homework, and we'll be back in a minute. So since we know that Yaz, Graham, and Ryan, but we won't be involving Ryan in the story, now have a functioning TARDIS at their disposal and no doctor to hold them back, Graham decides that he's going to show Yaz a little bit of what kept him entertained in his youth. So as they emerge from their TARDIS, which has now materialized in the form of a pup tent, they step out into the mud to find themselves in the summer of love on the rolling grassy hills of Woodstock, New York. The music is blaring. There are some strange things wafting through the air. Clothing optional. Graham seems really pleased by all this. Yaz is a little disconcerted. And everything seems to be all right. They're actually getting to the point where Yaz is coming around and enjoying the spectacle and the music and the general vibe of everything until they find that one person is not exactly enjoying the festival. They are staring intently at the soundboard with evil intent. He looks like he should be familiar, but they've never met this person before. But something is giving off a really, really bad vibe about this pock-faced little kid who is planning something with the technology at hand. Dun-dun-dun. Haley, you were given 12 and Bill, the meddling monk on Scarrow. It's like a game of Clue.
Yes.
Right?
So the meddling monk has done what the doctor wouldn't and changed the developmental path of the Daleks on the planet of Scarrow. So now, instead of being murderous machines intent on destroying everybody, they are delightful machines that just want to distribute fruit-flavored candy to all the children of the worlds, much to the grief of dentists everywhere. And their new battle cry is, Cavitate.
Cavitate.
Our 12th doctor is torn between his desire to save Gallifrey in the universe and prevent the birth of the evil Daleks, and, you know, his duty to preserve time.
Nice. Jay, you've got what began as a very straightforward mix here.
Oh, no, it's good. See, Eleven and decided to take Clara. She really wanted, she enjoyed seeing the snippets from the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade, and always wanted to be able to go to New York to witness it firsthand. And so they arrive on Thanksgiving morning to see the floats and all the balloons and all their glory, and things start getting out of hand. And, you know, it seems like the floats or the balloons are having a problem, and the doctor picks up on the fact that there's no wind. They shouldn't be acting that way. Can the doctor and Clara hunt down the nesting conscious in time to save the parade?
Please let one of them be the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man balloon. Please let one of them be. What did you do, Ray? Great. All right. Well, it's a game. It's a work in progress. I don't know. We'll have to go back. I haven't gone back to 2016 to re-listen to the Elevator Pitch of Doom to see whether that format might have a one-up on this one. But if the listeners are familiar with our back catalog, feel free to let us know which one they think might be the more interesting one to continue to pursue. By the way, we will give our listeners one if they want to play one. Here's one that you can feel free to chime in on social media or send us an email with your solution. One of the set of cards that I did not choose. If your heroes were our classic unit team, the Brig, Benton, and Yates, and your adversary was Dust, Stephen Moffat edition. You know, you have to be afraid of every inanimate object. So
right.
The unit dealing with scary Dust, and your location is Maui, Hawaii. So it's a vacation day for unit dealing with Dust. So have fun with that one.
Yep.
Well, we did take an extra week, but because we don't want to report on things that have clearly already gone by, so as you've been enjoying a lot of your lockdown tweet-alongs and things like that, which have been occupying a lot of our news, we will at least share the fact that with some of these that have now aired, like the one that just aired today as we were recording, being May 6th, being the 14th anniversary of the original broadcast of Girl in the Fireplace, they did a tweet-along with Stephen Moffat as the writer for that episode, Sophia Miles, obviously, as Renette Poisson, or Madame de Pompadour. Fantastic to see that story again. It's one that so many of us hold near and dear. But we got a little something extra. Jay, did you get a chance to watch this little video piece that they...
Not in its entirety, no. I have...
Okay. Oh, good. Then it's not going to be spoiled for it. I don't want to spoil it, because in true Moffat fashion, there's a twist.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So,
is it clever?
It is actually very... I really, really like it, because it has to do with changing... It was being described by a lot of the news feeds as a sequel. It's really more of like a little epilogue, because you remember how the story closes. Everybody's really sad because the doctor tries to go back to her funeral and he's too late, right? Or it goes back to see her one last time and it's her funeral. So he's clearly too late to see her one last time. This starts as a narration, one of her letters, you know, she kept writing to her lonely angel, writing to the doctor through the whole story. That was the relationship that was developing. This begins like that, and then it has this really kind of dark twist at the end, which I like a lot. And I will say that it reminds me a little bit of kind of what RTD had done with the little epilogue that he stuck on Rose a couple weeks ago, where it was a matter of trying to explain how the nesting consciousness actually, you know, one cell of the nesting consciousness survived, which explains why, even though they thought they eradicated it at the end of Rose, the episode Rose, that it's still out there and continues to taunt them for the rest of time. So I like the fact that these actually give the writers a chance to do a little continuity tweaking. It's a lot of fun. So we'll make sure that we link to it. It's 2 minutes of your time and you'll genuinely enjoy it.
Yeah.
Something that's going to take a lot more than 2 minutes of your time is to figure out what the hell this Time Lord Victorious project is going to be.
Yeah, I've read this twice and I can't quite wrap my head around it.
Yeah, so multi-platform, right? So we're obviously involving video production, audio production, because Big Finish is involved. But then there's also things like, you know, Escape Hunt UK, who do a lot of the themed escape rooms, and they had been really putting a lot of effort prior to all the, you know, the lockdown social distancing they had started preparing for. And we even reported on this months ago that they were going to be doing a Doctor Who themed project at multiple locations across the UK. So this is apparently going to be tied in with all that too. But not only is it apparently something where you can pursue pieces of the storyline in all of these different formats, but they somehow link together, which I don't quite follow. It's going to involve 8th, 9th, and 10th. Am I right? 8th, 9th, and 10th? So McGann, Eccleston in some capacity, to what degree, I'm not really sure, and Tennant, probably maybe in providing source material, I guess, I'm hoping, like some video screen footage or something like that. But this is like a long game thing. It's supposed to run like 12 weeks and carry from the end of the year, end of 2020, into January 21, assuming everything goes on schedule. I mean, we're obviously, you know, we
right,
have to.
Yeah.
But I have a question about this, because Jay, I know you and I were reading up over this over the last few days and trying to figure out exactly, well, the nature of the interconnected story. But I have a question about the rollout on this, because if this isn't going to be something, it seems like the timing is such that by the time this would be wrapping up around its 12th week or so, sounds like about the time that we would have the start of our next holiday special, which was supposed to be either Christmas or New Year's or something right around there, right?
Right.
So what do you think the odds are that this somehow, after all of this work they're putting into this, and however this really complicated, convoluted, choose-your-adventure kind of story goes along, that it somehow tees up what happens in our holiday special?
I don't know. That seems a little bit ambitious, but maybe. I have a hard time believing that they would pull something like that off after not hearing anything about Series 12. Having something like this leading into Series 13 just seems like a huge jump.
I guess.
Well, they did hire a new marketing director.
True.
Yeah, that's true. And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I don't recall if, is this holiday special already in the can? Have they already shot? I think they've already shot this one, haven't they?
And they're, I think so.
Yeah, so it's in post-production. So maybe the story for this has already been done and dusted, and this somehow connects to it. I don't know.
So I could see this working, like, so the escape room could be like an episode in the story that, you know, is not crucial to the development of a story, but is a nice little backstory. And maybe all of this introduces a character or a villain that is a part of the special. So it's backstory for them that you don't need to watch the episode, but if you know it, it's nice.
Oh, so say there's some character that gets described in the escape room storyline. And once you get out of that, you know, and you're being coached through it by, I don't know, like the Ninth Doctor or something, and Rose. Rose is supposed to be involved in this interconnected story in some capacity too, which would kind of make sense because her connection with the Eighth Doctor, can't really count that. But that gets referenced somewhere in the episode where somebody says, well, the data files show this instance where the Doctor, you know, previously helped these people get out of this situation. That happens to be the situation that happened in the escape room.
Or there's a lot of Doctor Who stories that start with an adventure that you didn't see. Like, they're coming back from that and describing it. Mm. The escape room could be the adventure you didn't see.
Yeah, yeah. So that way it doesn't intrude upon anybody who has no idea what they're referring to. But for those handful of people who were fortunate enough to be able to have the fuller experience, it's like an extra gift to them. That's cool. That'd be a lot of fun. No fun for us over here in the States, though.
No. No, unfortunately. But we do have one last piece of news on here, and this is more of RTD and Moffat discussing more hidden doctors.
Well, yeah. I don't know if this was like a pump fake, something that Moffat planned to pursue later, or whether it was just an idea that just, you know, helps him maintain a more complex backstory as he's writing his primary stories. And he shared it once with RTD, and they both went, ooh, wouldn't that be cool? And they never forgot about it?
I think it's one of those things that was only ever meant to exist in his head, and he accidentally told somebody.
But he told somebody who's just as much of a, ooh, ooh, do it, do it, do it.
Yeah.
Or maybe he knew, like, someday I'm going to write a big Finnish audio play.
Yeah, right? But I think it's, I have to agree with Russell. This is really clever. Just the idea of it is clever, even if it never came to fruition. Just having that kicking around in your head is saying, wow, wouldn't that be really sweet if this were the final gesture? So, all right, not to give too much away, because you can go ahead and read the article for yourself, but if you do recall Silence of the Library, the whole idea of this sequence with River in the AI world, talking to the moon, right? The moon, or Dr. Moon. Get it? Dr. Moon. Mm-hmm. So I guess it has something to do with one last little gift from the doctor to his beloved. Is that a safe way to put it?
Maybe.
So is the Dr. Moon in the library as well? So like his last gift to her is, hey, now we're going to spend eternity together in this virtual reality?
That's kind of how I interpreted it. Yeah. Or sort of an easing through the transition, sort of so that you don't go mad. Eternity in this thing with no familiar touchstone could lead to an eternity of insanity. So at least you've got a companion.
Yeah. I remember this coming up at one point when we were waiting to hear the casting of a new doctor. Like there was some internet rumors going around about, well, what about this guy? He's called Dr. Moon. What if he turns out to be the doctor? And it was one of those off the wall kind of things that people are like, all right, you know, go put your tin foil hat back on and whatever. And but it's like, I vividly remember that being a thing that people were talking about and thinking how ridiculous it sounded.
And it was probably Moffat who floated.
And Moffat was giggling in the corner.
Right.
He's one of the, amidst all of this kerfuffle, I'm going to float my idea out there and see if anybody thinks it's ridiculous too. Nice.
I'm Michelle Ealy from the Starlight Tribune, an Arrow TV show fan podcast, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other amazing geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
I gotta say, we're kind of short and sweet this week, but I'm gonna consider this conserving my energy because of next week.
Next week is going to be amazing.
It is.
So we're going back to our classic rewatch, and we're finally coming up to The City of Death.
Yes.
Widely regarded as one of the best classic series out there.
You've got sort of a perfect storm here. So you've got the Fourth Doctor, and you're dealing with Douglas Adams as your writer.
Right.
Writer, and at this time he is also your primary story editor, so he has complete, almost autonomous control over the crafting of the story here. But you're also dealing with an over the top villain, and the Duggan factor.
Duggan.
That's all I gotta say. That's all you really need, because Romana is phenomenal in this one. I mean, they are only two stories in at this point, but their chemistry is electric, and the locations across Paris for when they do some of their on-location shoots. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it's freaking awesome, and we love it and love it, love it.
So, well, this has been episode 379 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying I can't come up with a synopsis for this episode. It's too weird.
And this is Kier saying, Duggan, 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 Duggan.
And this is Haley saying, wait, Duggan's back?
We'll see you guys next week.
MLZ.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
attention. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.